Hi, this is Pastor John. Thank you for joining me. What I'd like to do is I'd like to read from a book by Dave Wilkerson. This is going to be chapter one in this book, God's Plan to Protect His People in the Coming Depression. All right, this book was written in 1998. Dave writes and he says that, "I'm alarmed that so many ministers are blind to what is happening. I spoke at a ministers' conference recently," he says, "warning that we're seeing the beginning of a disastrous depression here in the United States. In fact, I preached this message a year before the Asian crisis began and when the United States stock market was nearly 9,400. After I finished my tearful warning, Dave says, one minister was overheard saying, "I hope those pastors who heard this tonight have better sense than to preach such foolishness from their pulpits. A prosperous, satisfied people simply do not want to hear anything that might threaten their good life." With that, I'd like to welcome you to listen to the next few webcasts that I present as I read Dave Wilkerson's words. They're not my words, they're his words, but in reading his words, I have found myself to be in total agreement with him. And so I'm not going to keep saying that he wrote it. I want you to know that he wrote it. These are not my words, and I'm reading it because I think that some of the people in my community listen better than read. They don't like reading. So I'll read for them. Our nation's leaders are so blind and foolish that oppression has already begun in America. Yet our politicians continue fiddling away as Nero did while Rome burned. They ought to be alarmed. They ought to be preparing our country for the frightful times coming just ahead. People's confidence in the economy has fluctuated at an incredible pace, and soon millions of Americans will suddenly stop spending, just as the people of Japan did. When the Japanese consumers were moved by fear, they simply stopped buying. It's time that we face the truth. America is on a fast track to the full-blown depression that would end up with very much worse than the Great Depression in the 30s, and this depression cannot be stopped. A temporary bull market serves only to delay the crash a bit longer. And with that, I want you to listen in with me as I present this webcast tonight. Dave goes on and says that a temporary bull market serves only to delay the crash a bit longer, but increases its certainty. Then he says, "Let me reassure you, however, that this book is not about the bad news facing our nation. Rather, it is about the good and comforting news that God's covenant promises to preserve and to protect his people through every storm." Now, I read that and I said, you know what? He's absolutely correct. He's absolutely correct. But what storm is he talking about? Well, let me read the introduction to his book, and then I think that you will understand exactly what I'm talking about. Ominous storm clouds have gathered above the nation, and they are mounting higher and higher. A Newsweek cover screams, "Global crash." The New York Times announces, "Wall Street gloom shakes confidence. Markets quake. Voices of reason keep crying out from every corner, trying to warn us about the coming financial holocaust." Oh man, I like those words. Don't they sound very biblical and very prophetic? The coming holocaust. Follow along. In his writing, he says, "Yet these warnings are being wholly ignored by those who should be alarmed. As a result, we're witnessing the tragic repeat of the mistakes and the apathy that preceded the Great Depression of the 1930s. some 70 years ago. President Calvin Coolidge turned a deaf ear to many of the warnings of the impending financial crash. Then later, in the midst of that depression, President Herbert Hoover ignored the warnings of the opposition party, who said that America was falling into an ever-deepening crisis. President Hoover responded, "It's almost over. The fundamentals of our nation are all sound, and there is nothing to worry about." Sounds a lot like Barack Obama. Now, decades later, a dreadful depression looms on our horizon once more. Yet again, the voices of reason have gone unheeded. Economist Joseph Schumpeter called Wall Street's financial aberrations an ostrich mentality, creative destruction. While our nation's attention is drawn to scandals in Washington, and the world around us is falling deeper and deeper into depression, Russia is starving, Asia has lost in a dark hole of despair. Soon Korea will be on the brink of chaos. China faces financial ruin. This was written in 1998. With millions of people already unemployed, hungry, and homeless, now South America is beginning to disintegrate as the nations begin to fall like dominoes. The International Monetary Fund quakes with fear because its resources are nearly gone. "I tell you, what is happening cannot be fixed," says this particular writer. "There is no magic bullet to save us, but God is about to chasten the nations of the world through an economic holocaust, and his sword is already unsheathed." In other words, it's pulled out of the safety gamut and it's ready to swing. Well, he goes on in his book in chapter one, and he says, "In 1998, I released the book America's Last Call, On the Brink of Economic Holocaust. Afterwards, our offices were inundated with appeals for financial advice and words of encouragement. The request came from Christians who believe warnings, yet who are overwhelmed with fears about the future. Their most asked question was, and I quote, 'How can we prepare for what is coming? We agreed that the storm is on the horizon, but isn't there a word of encouragement for us from the Lord, something to help us through it all?' Then this writer said, 'I sought God diligently for a message of hope, comfort, and direction. I reasoned with him, Lord, if you put this on my heart, such an awesome warning about coming depression, then you should also give me a message of hope.' I believe that he has," Dave says. It says, "If you expect to find financial advice in this book," Wilkerson says, "you will be disappointed." And I'm kind of glad he said that, because that's what's the matter with America. America's, you know, thinking that money can get them out of any jam. Quiet is kept when you really look at it. Money is what got you in the jam in the first place. And, you know, we just turn our backs on rationale and we dive headlong into it. Money's going to solve the problem. There is no collateral behind our money in this country. This is me talking. There's nothing behind it. It's all just a big phony thing. What do? We rushed after the golden slipper. That's what we've done. And we've left the ball with no shoes. And in a bit, we'll have no, well, let me leave that alone. He goes on and says that, "I believe that you'll discover in these pages God's plan to keep his people in the coming depression. May faith arise in your heart and evict all fears as you read this message of hope." Then he says, "Please begin at chapter one and read each chapter in order." And that's what I plan to do. And I hope that as you come to these webcasts, that you would be able to, with me, pay attention to these chapters. Now let me come on into chapter one, Lessons We Never Learned from the Great Depression of 1929. I really want you folks, especially you younger people to listen to me and kind of pay attention to these words, because I think that the words are very important. The industrial situation of the United States is absolutely sound, and our credit situation is in no way critical. The interest given by all the publics to brokers and loans is always exaggerated. The markets generally are now in a healthy condition. The last 6 weeks have done an immense amount of good by shaking down prices. I know nothing wrong with the stock market or with the underlying businesses and credit structure. That was Charles Mitchell, chairman of the National City Bank in New York City, 2 days before the stock market crashed on October the 22nd, 1929. The time was a roaring 20s, ladies and gentlemen, and America was enjoying the greatest prosperity in its national history. Very few people saw the storm clouds gathering ahead. Most people's thoughts and energies were focused upon making money. Does that sound familiar to you? This period was also known as the Decade of Decadence. During this time, God gave the world a lesson about his wrath against nations that sinned against his mercy. Now, I'm in agreement with Wilkerson because I believe that's exactly where America is today. He goes on and he says, he sent a warning to America in the form of a major depression. Some of you won't believe that because some of you don't believe in God in the first place. Well, stop mentioning his name. Stop calling on him. Stop looking all disillusioned when your life blows up and go to hell. Oh, yes, he's going to send something on us in our decade, too. Wilkerson goes on and says, in a single 10-day period from 1919, 10-year period, I'm sorry, in a single 10-year period from 1919 to 1929, America changed from a society of mostly religious, well-mannered citizens to a nation saturated with drunkenness, licentiousness, and obsession with sex. Look at where we are today. Come on, we need to stop playing with it. I don't even turn on that boob tube because all they're trying to show me is a bunch of boobs. But anyhow, let me leave that alone. Wilkerson goes on and says that two main factors contributed to this change. The inventions of the radio. Now, keep this in mind. The radio was invented right before the Depression time. And the closed-top automobile. You may say, what is Wilkerson talking about? Is he nuts? Listen to me, and then you determine. Up to that time, most cars had no tops. But with the advent of the enclosed car came a sexual revolution. Unmarried couples started using their newfound privacy for sex. Now, I know what I'm talking about because I was walking my dog today. This is March 2009. And as I walked him down the street, and I walk him in the middle of the street because other dogs walk on grass and stuff like that, and animals have ticks. And I don't want my dog to get ticks, so I walk him right next to the cars in the middle of the street. Lo and behold, while I'm walking my dog, I had to pull him away because there was two used condoms with human semen in it in the street that the people were using in the cars parked out in front of the house on my street. Please. And so don't try to get mad at me. It's happening right out there in the raw, right in front of you. This moral upheaval, back to Wilkerson's article, says unmarried couples started using their newfound privacy for sex. This moral upheaval prompted the newspapers of the time to label the new cars brothels on wheels. In 1920, the women's suffrage movement gave American women the right to vote, an event said to have liberated the modern woman, quote unquote. Yet this landmark, Dave says, acts also ushered in other forms of liberation regarding women. Up to this time, women were said to be the guardians of morality in America. But suddenly, the women gained more freedom. Okay, the hems of their skirts began to go higher and higher until 1919, women wore dresses which were so long that they virtually scraped the ground. Now, as the new immorality of the 20s took root, dress codes changed drastically. The new decade became an era of the flappers. And I remember that if some of you are over your 50s like I am, you remember the television series, The Roaring Twenties, when they specialized in that, you know, under Frank Nitti, Al Capone, and Elliot Ness, and all that kind of time. Young women who wore thin, form-fitting dresses in an effort to shake off the old Victorian moral codes. Now, some of you that aren't Christian, you're listening to me and you say, you old dude, you just need to die so we can have our fun. Let me say this. Let me talk to those of you that have that attitude. In hell, you will lift up your eyes because you are listening to this and you refuse to pay attention to it because you're thinking that I'm some old gray-haired dude that's out of my mind. We're going to find out who's out of our mind. God is God. He's immutable. He never changes. His standards of conduct never changes. Wilkerson goes on and says, this change in dress was so unprecedented and so abrupt. An alarmed fashion writer of the New York Times declared, and I quote, the American woman has lifted skirts far beyond any modest limitation. Another writer warned, I quote, if dresses or hems are 9 inches off the ground today, they could come a day in our nation where it becomes immoral. Hems will rise to the kneecaps. Boy, he was being generous. These women now are showing everything and marking their bodies up like a bunch of sailors going, well, let me leave that one alone. These weren't the rantings of conservative preachers, mind you, ladies and gentlemen, but of the unconverted press. You see, the press has been converted in the mind of Dave Wilkerson. I don't even call them converted. The press is a bunch of debauched individuals looking for thrills on Blueberry Hill. Now, what would they think of today's miniskirts revealing dresses and near-nude bathing suits? In retrospect, Wilkerson says, it's easy to be amused by the eroding morals of the 20s. Preachers of that time denounced women who wore rouge, calling them painted ladies. They even cried out against women who bobbed their hair and rode bicycles on Sunday. But in truth, the acceleration of bad manners and morals in the 20s was no laughing matter. Suddenly, Wilkerson writes and says, the upright morality of the past was being mocked, and as a result, disastrous situations came in. Smoking became pandemic. So-called nice girls began to light up cigarettes in public, just like men. Oh, you remember back in the 70s, or was it the late 60s? Virginia Slim cigarette, you've come a long way, baby. I know you're right about it. And then Wilkerson goes on and says, and while their male counterparts carried hip flask full of whiskey, women even began chewing tobacco and spitting in spittoons. That's a nasty act even for a man. Soon, an obsession with sex swept the nation like wildfire. The subject became a daily focus of conversation. Sex-centered Freudian philosophy swept the land, and religious convictions about sex were ridiculed. Man, what you think they're doing today? I teach in a college, and I'm telling you, the way some of these kids talking with me, I know they're having sex. And it's disgusting. But you can't tell them that because they think I'm a dinosaur, the creature from the Black Lagoon, unleashed. Public dancing became sensual back in 1919s and the 20s, and intimate and sex in the movies and magazines grew. Okay, it was permissive by the period standards. There were even some nudity in films and publications of the time before the censor codes were put into place. At this point, liberal preachers who prided themselves on keeping up with the times dismissed all the warnings of a moral landslide. They tried to to reassure and alarm public that the sexual experimentation of the period would not escalate into deeper immorality. They even made light of young people smoking and drinking gin and dancing and sensuality and having sex in the back of cars. But the situation was rapidly getting worse. By 1923, young women were crowding into bars during cocktail hour, just like the men, hiking their feet up on the bar rail, getting drunk and having to be carried out into their cars. You can imagine what happened if the dude carried them out there, and along with strong drink and even stronger words, language suddenly turned foul and indecent. You remember Bonnie and Clyde, don't you? Sure enough, I know you do. God's name was cursed everywhere, an act unthinkable just a few years before. And trust me, what Wilkerson is writing is true. A few years before the Roaring Twenties, you wouldn't hear or see this mess out and open in America. You would be arrested.